Welcome, lovely listeners, to the Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales podcast. It's Valentine's week, and I have two creepy tales to tantalize you with. Our first story is titled Wages of Sin by P.F. McGrail, where an immortal discovers love. But to what end? And our second story, Some Smells Shouldn't Be Ignored, by P. Oxford, explores why it's so important to investigate those smells. Could be a dead rat, right? Speaking of smells, I'm currently drinking some New York breakfast tea, and it's delicious. I just want to read the description for you because I never knew tea could be so exotic. It says here, a contemporary masterpiece, evocative of the sparkling city that never sleeps. This extraordinary black tea is an inviting whole leaf Assam blended with rich and malty sweetness. A tea to savor from morning till far into the night. Whoever wrote this really loves their tea, and I thought I loved my tea. This person definitely loves their tea. But yes, it is delicious and all of those things. Now, grab your own hot beverage, hopefully a tea, and turn the lights off, the sound up, and get ready to hear where love leads us. The first time I died was easily the scariest, but it was far from the most painful. One sensation comes from a lack of knowledge and the other from an abundance of it. After a certain point, pain and knowledge become inseparable. The first death was simple. I was a pauper living on the outskirts of Rome. I had just lifted some denarii from a wealthy traveller, and was walking quickly away when he slid a knife between my ribs. I had lived a poor man's life, died a poor man's death, and was forgotten by the world the next day. The pauper's grave was easy enough to rip apart. I tore through the dirt with surprising ease, emerging in the daylight to find the world had decided to keep me in mind after all. I had no idea what made me able to rise up. Imagine my shock to find that 5 years had passed. I understood on an intellectual level that the world would persist after my own death, but I found myself horrified to find that people had continued to live on as though my passing had no effect on the world I'd left behind. No one really accepts the fact that their own death will ultimately leave the universe unmarred. Revenge consumed my mind in those early years. There was nothing left of my old life, so I was determined to find the man who had taken it from me. After 3 years of fruitless searching, I came to the realization that he had tricked me. My thirst for vengeance had prevented me from being happy. Even after my resurrection, the man had managed to continue to steal my life. I hated myself for it, but began the slow process of letting the pain go. It took me a year to make real progress. I understood that there must be some meaning to my life if my death wasn't permanent. So I searched for the purpose beyond my baser instincts. For the first time, I started to believe that there was one. I actually came to forgive my killer. I encountered him by chance 9 years after he'd first stabbed me. My inner peace did nothing to stop my desire to hurt him, though, and I was surprised to find myself attacking him almost immediately. I didn't care if I got caught. I just wanted him dead. After I pulled his own knife from his bag, he never had a chance. I stood over his bloody corpse, chest heaving, and assumed that someone would tackle me and drag me to a pauper's cell. No one did. I was free to live my life as I saw fit. I was horrified to find that I was none the happier. The man's last laugh was giving me exactly what I wanted. All it did was prove that my pursuit had been a waste from the beginning, and so I learned to be alone. I don't mean that I simply existed in solitude. I contoured my soul to accept the fact that the majority of the self is isolated so deeply in our own minds that no person will ever truly know us. That knowledge helped me face life and survive it. It was always the same. I lived, I died. 5 years later, I rose again. My body couldn't burn or rot. Wherever it had been left, it was reanimated with renewed vigor. Each new rising was accompanied by a short burst of strength which allowed me to escape my tomb. The strength always faded when I was free, and then I began life anew. I embraced my solitude, which was occasionally physical and perpetually spiritual, as a talisman rather than a burden. Everyone you've ever loved will die one day. You haven't accepted that. No one has. We need to deny death if we want to live life. I just haven't had that luxury. That's my pain. That's my knowledge. And it was ripped away from me when I met Wendy. Attending lectures was a habit that I developed around the 18th century. I could be close enough to a large group of people to feel the humanity around me, but remained anonymous enough to prevent anyone caring about me. Loving someone means making yourself vulnerable. It's not that it comes with the territory, the two concepts are simply one and the same. I had remained blissfully unloved, yet still able to feel the flow of humanity. The speaker at these lectures connected with each listening individual, but there was no reciprocation needed. In 2003, Wendy was a college senior who was heading up a trip to Rwanda to dig wells for drinking. I listened to her lecture and thought I'd be ill. Over time, I had learned to pursue only prostitutes. They were the most honest people I'd ever met. They knew value and boundary like no other. I didn't understand why Wendy made me ill. I just knew I had to talk to her. I searched centuries worth of memory to find a way to introduce myself in a way that was charming but not pushy, intellectual without arrogance. I wanted to impress her without seeming like I needed to impress her. I approached her after the lecture. Hi. Her smile made me feel sick again. I'll be honest. Most people would have called her a 6, maybe a 7 on a good day. She was extra curvy and rarely wore makeup. Her Midwestern twang made the occasional word hard to understand. If Wendy had an opinion, she made it known, and it was usually about remembering the forgotten people of the planet. Maybe that's what got to me. I didn't think of myself as forgotten until she remembered everything about me. It scared me that she knew exactly what I was thinking when so little was said. Wendy had a light in her eyes that eluded written explanation. She gave me the things I was missing without having to say what she was doing. There's a million bullshit sayings about, you know you're in love when... I've dismissed everyone with a casual flourish, bred from several lifetimes of cynicism. It petrified me to see how easily Wendy broke that shell. I thought it impenetrable, but she overcame my defenses without even trying. I was flabbergasted to find that the layers of solitude I'd thought so strong were in fact almost nothing. Nothing at all. Love is when you find someone you never knew you needed to survive. This was an astounding lesson to learn after nearly 2 millennia of not knowing it. It's terrifying. The blind man who gains sight will spend the rest of his years fearing for his eyes. When she said, "Yes," the look on her face told me that she was even more vulnerable to me than I was to her. In 2007, I was crossing the street. I looked left. The driver looked right, and I died at the scene. As I lay gasping in the dirt, I already knew it was 2012. When I had regained my breath, I stood up, brushed the grime off the formal suit that had been selected for my burial, and quickly walked across the grass. As I exited, I gave an awkward smile to the slack-jaw funeral attendees under the large tent. I'd learned long ago that confronting people who had known me before I died was a bad idea. Eventually, I realized it was best to move on entirely with a clean slate. Things were different this time. I was different. She had made me weak. I first saw her in a coffee shop. She'd aged 10 years in 5, and that light was now dim. I'm ashamed to say, that made me feel good about myself. I had planned a delayed reintroduction, but once I saw her, it was far too late. My legs worked on their own accord as I approached the front door. She looked up, and the light grew. I nearly tripped over my own feet when I saw it. She stood up, held out her arms, and embraced a stranger. She kissed him, and she meant it. My feet, still acting independently of my mind, quickly carried me away from the carnage. I'm good at making connections. Sometimes those connections are, by necessity, dark. We all need evil things at some point in our lives. We simply learn to adjust our perspectives until we're able to see in the shadows. Then, they don't seem so dark. The cat is a monster to every mouse, and the farmer will cause more death than any army. But everyone finds a way to sleep at night. I didn't know I needed Wendy before I'd met her. That was the only reason I had survived. But the thought of wanting her now and not being able to have her was perpetual pain. Death is the salve of the drowning man, but it's a cure I can never embrace. I had to have her back. Wendy would never know that her boyfriend had been murdered. There are people who are very, very good at what they do. It's amazing how much of their souls they will sell for a little cash. In that way, at least, they're indistinguishable from the rest of humanity. I felt obligated to watch it happen. If you ever expect other people to live by the choices you make, but cannot face them yourself, rest assured that you made the wrong choice. I got sick again and she stepped out of her apartment. The years and stress had signed their name in creases and bags on her face. Yes, but the way her hair bobbed as she walked down the stairs, the current of wind catching in her sundress, the way I knew she smelled like grapefruit and lavender from across the street. It all served to turn my stomach and spin my head. I had to be with her. If the solace of death was an option for me, I might have taken it. But that obligation would have to go to someone else. Mindless rage coursed through my head when I saw him. Tall, semi-attractive, flecks of grey in his hair. I saw past all her imperfections and right into his. He was an asshole. Don't ask me to explain why. The white Mercedes turned down the corner, my fists clenched. Life can turn on a dime, folks. And your bill is often paid on a stranger's fare. The car was only going about 40, but that was enough. He closed the gap on them in a space of time that seemed both eternal and infinitesimally small. She looked up at him for the last time, and I saw the light on her face. I was about to turn it off. Wendy's light. Me. I had not wanted to believe that she could heal from me. But she had. She had. She had. We tend to assume that healing means we stop hurting. But they are often opposing ideas. That's the dime. Here's the turn. It was too late to call off the car. I sprinted across the street, pulse racing, mouth screaming, tears streaming, snot spilling. I knew there was noise, but I couldn't hear a thing. Mr. Asshole looked up at me in profound confusion. I looked at him for the last time. Our collision stopped me instantly, and I fell flat on my ass. He tumbled between two parked cars and landed harmlessly on the lawn. I looked stupidly behind me, vaguely realizing that the Mercedes logo was at eye level. I woke up today in 2017. Every part of me wants to see Wendy. But I love her enough to give her a clean slate. I will never see Wendy again. My final gift to her. I waited 1,913 years to find her. And it wasn't just her. I couldn't find me until she changed me. I didn't know how bitter coffee tasted or how soft linen could feel until I met her. Does that make sense? Probably not. Suffice to say that the price of 4 years with Wendy was 2 millennia without her. I'm happy to pay that price again. And it's time to start paying, one day at a time. Just please, don't judge the fact that I always carry two silly things in my pocket. One is a tiny bottle of grapefruit shampoo, the other, a vial of lavender perfume. And on to our next story. Some smells shouldn't be ignored. You know when people say, if something seems too good to be true, it usually is? Turns out, they're right. I recently moved in with my boyfriend. He has a beautiful flat in an old building. It's a penthouse and everything. We hadn't been together that long, but I knew from the first time I met him that he was the one. We'd be together till death do us part. If it was up to me, at least. At the beginning of the relationship, I wasn't sure if he felt the same way. He was always a bit distant, always referring to me as babe, honey, or some other nickname, but never calling me by name. According to John Tucker Must Die, a movie filled to the brim with advice for life, this is a clear way of knowing that a guy is two-timing you. I'm sure he was seeing multiple girls at the beginning, but that was okay. It's the 21st century after all, but that's not what this story is about. When he asked me to move in with him, I was thrilled. I had been living in a crappy flat share with 6 other people and owned no furniture. Packing up my stuff was easy, and his apartment was a dream. I had only been there 2 or 3 times before I moved in. For some reason, he always seemed to prefer staying at my place. Maybe it made him feel young. Who knows? Cal worked a lot, so I would spend the days alone in the flat. I'm a painter, and Cal was very supportive of my art. He told me I could use the spare bedroom as an atelier, and he even convinced me to quit my waitressing job so I could dedicate all my time to my art. I loved him so much. The first days in the flat, as I was setting up the atelier, I heard sounds coming from the wall. Rats. Damn. I've lived in my fair share of crappy flats, so I'm not unfamiliar with the sound of critters in the walls. Then, the flies appeared. I was taking a break from painting, sitting on the floor of the atelier, eating a slice of pizza, trying to figure out what my latest art piece was missing. A fat fly landed on my pizza. I shook it angrily. Another fat fly was buzzing right next to it. I looked around the room. There were at least 5 flies there. When I told Cal about it later, he got really annoyed. What the hell have you been doing in there? I shrugged, frowning. His anger surprised me, made me uncomfortable. You don't eat in there, do you? He asked, disgusted. Sometimes. Well, maybe if you weren't such a pig, this wouldn't happen. God, if you're gonna make a mess, at least don't complain to me about it. I'm sorry, I exclaimed, distressed. His whole demeanor changed so fast, it didn't occur to me that it was my fault. Oh, babe, no, I'm sorry, it's just... I've been under a lot of pressure lately. I didn't mean to take it out on you. Just ignore the flies. I'm sure they'll go away eventually. The next day, there were even more flies. I didn't say anything to Cal. I was too worried about his reaction. There was also a strange smell in the room, though. I was sincerely worried that I had accidentally dropped food somewhere, so I cleaned the whole room. Didn't make a difference. I had left the window wide open since I moved in. I like to paint in the cold. So I decided the smell and the flies must be coming from somewhere outside. I closed the window. When I returned to the room after getting lunch, the smell had gotten much worse. I hadn't really noticed it as I painted, but after the fresh air from the outside, the stench was impossible to ignore. A rank stench of decay. I closed the door and opened the window. I decided I had to talk to Cal about it later. I guess one of the rats had died in the walls or something.
Yeah, it does smell a little funky in here.
Rats?
No, we don't have rats here. No, I'm pretty sure we don't. I don't know why you would think that. Too much paint fumes in that little room?
His eyes went dark with anger before he managed to pull himself together. I hadn't realized how temperamental he was before I moved in with him.
You know what? I bet it's from the downstairs neighbor.
Cal relaxed as he spoke.
You remember the weird guy we saw in the lift that first day?
I shuddered. I remembered. I bet it's him. His flat would be right under this room.
I don't want to know what he's doing down there.
You just spray some Febreze, and I'm sure it'll go away eventually. How could I forget the downstairs neighbor? I had only seen him once, the day I moved in, but it had made an impression. We had been taking the elevator down to get the last of my stuff, and it stopped on the floor below the flat. I noticed Cal looking uncomfortable, probably anticipating the neighbor. The doors opened, and I felt my nostrils flare in objection. The man waiting outside was tall, skinny, dressed all in black, and smelt worse than anyone I have ever encountered. He locked eyes with me, then let his gaze slide over to Cal, then back to me. I shuddered involuntarily. He frowned, staring at me for several seconds. Then he entered the lift without a word. We rode down in silence. Every time I took that elevator, I worried that I'd run into him. I tried not to think about what he could be doing in that flat to cause a smell like this one floor up. The next day there were more flies, and the smell was even stronger. I called Cal at work.
You're exaggerating, it can't be that bad. Just get some Febreze and get over it. And don't disturb me at work unless it's actually important. If there is a rat there, the smell will go away eventually. Don't be such a damn princess.
I didn't really want to press the issue. He seemed to be really stressed. I just kept the door closed and the window open, spraying the whole room with Febreze like he told me to. I spent the day sketching outside instead, not able to take the smell. The smell only got worse. I wanted to paint, but I couldn't stand being in that room. I was probably being a bit of a princess, but Cal didn't have to work in that smell. I thought about the sounds I'd heard the first days. To me, that had sounded like some damn big rats. One of those dying in my wall could definitely stink up a room. But maybe Cal was right after all. Maybe it was the downstairs neighbor. I figured I had to talk to that weird guy. At least I'd give it a shot. After talking myself up, I went to ring his doorbell. As the door cracked open, the smell of stale sweat and cat piss rolled over me. I almost staggered backwards. He opened the door just as much as the security chain would allow.
Excuse me, sir. I live right upstairs. I just moved in with...
I cut myself off as I saw him start to slowly close the door.
Sorry, I'll be fast. It's just a bit awkward, but there's kind of a smell in our flat.
His eyes went wide, but he didn't say anything.
He just stood there, staring at me. The door stopped moving.
My boyfriend suggested that maybe you...
I faltered. His gaze didn't waver for a moment. I stood there for 10 seconds, considering whether I should run. In the end, my social conditioning to not be rude took over. I tried again.
There was a bit of a weird smell in our apartment, and my boyfriend suggested that you might know something about it.
His face contorted into a frown. He still didn't say anything.
I mean, I don't know.
I was flailing.
Do you know if there are rats in the building?
I finished, defeated. He smiled.
No. No rats. Cats.
Okay, well, bye then.
I turned, walking quickly down the hall. The door slammed shut behind me. I heard it open again.
Lady? Maybe you shouldn't be here, lady.
He called after me. I turned, only to see his door slam shut for the second time. I continued walking, thoroughly unsettled. The door opened again. I didn't turn around, just started walking faster.
Maybe not so safe, lady, with rats.
I shuddered, frantically pressing the elevator button over and over. I heard the door click shut behind me. I sighed in relief. I swore to never talk to that guy again. Whatever the hell he was doing, to make our beautiful flat smell like death, I didn't want to know. Back in the apartment, the stench had started to spread into the living room. I realized I was scared that Cal would get mad. I knew he thought I had messed something up in the atelier. The idea that I was scared of his reaction unsettled me. He was the love of my life, after all. I decided I was nervous because I wanted him to be happy. That I didn't want him to be stressed about anything. I decided I wasn't scared of him. I loved him after all. As I went over our relationship in my head, it hit me that the smell here was completely different from the downstairs apartment. There, it smelled like stale sweat and old cat piss. Here, it smelled like death.
No rats my ass. I mumbled.
I knew a fat rat in the wall was the only explanation. I figured it was time to call an exterminator. I briefly considered calling Cal to see if he minded, but he had been so mad the last time I called him at work. He thought I was being a princess. I decided I'd just do this on my own, dipping into the little money I had left. I couldn't paint in a room like that. I was a grown woman who could handle her own problems. I called an exterminator. He referred me to a guy that specializes in getting dead rats out of walls. Apparently, that's a thing. Lucky for me, he had a cancellation, so he could come right over. So damn lucky for me.
Yeah. You've had a dead rat. Probably several. You know, this happens sometimes when people put out rat poison. Their nest is probably in your wall, and they crawled back there to die. Don't worry, I'll take care of it. I have to cut a hole in the wall, though. Is that okay?
I frowned, thinking Cal would get mad, but he never goes into the atelier. I figured I could just put a canvas in front of the hole and get it fixed.
But don't worry, hon. With those exposed bricks, it's really easy to patch it back up. Just slap on some mortar and chuck the bricks back in place. Anyone could do it. You wouldn't be able to tell at all.
I told him to go ahead. I was sitting in the kitchen when the police showed up. I was sitting in the interrogation room when they told me about the dead body they found behind the wall. I was sitting in the lawyer's office when they told me it was the remains of Cal's previous girlfriend. I was sitting in the witness box in the courtroom when they told me he had left her there to die a slow, horrifying death. I was sitting in the stands when they gave him life without parole for premeditated murder. But I was sitting all alone in a cheap motel when I realized
that she had still been alive when I moved in. The building really didn't have rats.
So, our first story sees an immortal discovering love, losing that love, and then never ever ceasing to find it once more. It seems that they're doomed to hunt for Wendy's love forever. But luckily, they have all the time in the world. And our second story really hits home when it comes to that question. Is it a rat? Is it a cat? It's a dead woman. That's gonna be one exterminator call that you're not gonna forget. Yeesh. And no, it couldn't have gotten any worse. But I hope you enjoyed these two creepy stories, and if you want to read more of these kinds of stories, check out Love, Death, and Other Inconveniences in the Amazon store. The link to this book and its brilliant authors are in the episode notes. And tomorrow, you brilliant listeners, I've got a Valentine's episode special just for your ears. So join me tomorrow for a great time. And on that note, this is the place where stories live, and you tale tellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.